Saleh, and this is Living History. This show explores the rich heritage of the Brandywine Valley outside Philadelphia, focusing on the people, places, and events over more than 300 years which have played an important part in our American heritage. Each show highlights a local town, event, or personality who's had a notable influence on our culture. And before we get started, I want to mention that our call-in line, if you have questions or comments, is 610-701-9243. That's 610-701-9243. This day in history, February 8th. On this day in 1943, U.S. Marines secure the island of Guadalcanal in the Southwest Pacific. After a long series of bloody battles against thousands of entrenched Japanese troops during World War II, the remote outcropping of sand, rock, and partial jungle in the Solomon Islands chain became part of the Japanese strategy to conquer the entire Pacific Ocean and control it during the Global War. But after numerous harrowing battles, the Marines were victorious, paving the way for future successes and the eventual retreat of the Japanese from the region. And in 1978, one of the worst blizzards in decades hits the U.S. northeastern states, dumping as much as 55 inches of snow on Rhode Island in Massachusetts, leaving motorists stranded, forcing the abandonment of 3,500 vehicles on roadways around the region. Over 3 days, the slow-moving blizzard caused people to run and panic to get food supplies, with rescuers having to airlift food to students at Providence College. Although the Northeast commonly experiences harsh winter storms, this one traps thousands of people, causing 56 deaths before it left the area. Today's topic is a bit different: Ernest Hemingway in Cuba. So how do we go from the Brandywine Valley to Ernest Hemingway? Ernest Hemingway is the author who inspired me to start my writing career. His phrasing, his insights, give us a special glimpse of the world around us. In his book Islands in the Stream, published posthumously in 1970, he says, "You've got to make it inside yourself, wherever you are." Hemingway faced many challenges: two serious plane crashes, car wrecks, serious health issues. But his point is, you've got to face them head on and move forward. Anyone who's read the works of Ernest Hemingway knows that the author was a true lover of adventure, engaging in marlin fishing off Key West in Cuba, big game hunting in Africa, fishing and hunting in the wilds of Michigan, Wyoming, and Montana, bullfights in Spain, and numerous other pursuits around the globe. Hemingway spent nearly one-third of his life in Cuba, the adopted country where he took up residence around 1940. His home, the Finca Vigia, or Lookout Farm, was his haven, where he wrote some of his best-known works, including The Old Man and the Sea, for which he was awarded the Pulitzer Prize in 1953. His other Cuban-influenced works, To Have and Have Not and Islands in the Stream, describe his travels around the region, including his sport fishing exploits and even hunting for Nazi submarines during World War II. Dennis Noble is an author who's become fascinated with Hemingway and his exploits around Cuba. Noble visited Cuba 3 times and wrote a book detailing the interesting sights, sounds, foods, and friendly people there, titled Hemingway's Cuba: Finding the Places and People That Influenced the Writer. The book is a walking tour of many of the places Hemingway visited and spent time in, including Cohimar, the small village outside Havana, where Hemingway met the local Cuban fishermen who worked their trade every day, inspiring to write his novella, which has become a masterpiece. Dennis is here with us today. Dennis, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Oh, my pleasure. When did you first get interested in writing a book about Ernest Hemingway in Cuba?
Around 2008, I gained permission to research in Cuba on human smuggling, that's known as getting a license. While there and being have an interest in Hemingway, I visited his home. This gave me the idea for writing about Hemingway. In Cuba, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. You visited there a few times to see the area and walk in Hemingway's footsteps. Tell us a little bit about some of the more interesting spots you actually walked in and kind of followed in his footsteps.
One of those area is around Obispo Street in Havana. He walked from the Ambos Mundo to where he was staying to the Floridita, his favorite watering hole. That's probably one of the better areas to walk to get a feeling of Hemingway. There's another one from the Ambos Mundo over to the Plaza San Francisco. That's where the first lines of the
The book To Have and Have Not?
Have and Have Not. I'm sorry, my mind sometimes slips. Yeah, that's where those two areas are the easiest for a person to get to.
Mm-hmm. I am have a personal link to Cuba because I'll be taking a Smithsonian tour of Cuba, and I'll be there this spring. By the way, before we get too much further, I do want to mention and give a special hello to my good friend Stu Foster and his wife, who are listening in from England. Stu is a longtime student of Hemingway and has visited some of the more important spots the writer spent some time. So, Stu, cheers to you. And to all my Facebook friends listening in. You mentioned in the book that you stopped at Hemingway's home. What did you see when you went to his home, the Finca Vigia?
I should say for people that want to visit there, normally they don't allow you inside the house. You walk along the outside looking through the windows and through the doorways. But because I had a guide and interpreter with me that knew the head of the museum there, I got a tour on the inside of the house.
That's a special tour. Not many people get that.
No, they don't. Would you be interested in what some of the things I saw in there?
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? Before we get into that, I'm going to mention, as a lot of people know, that Hemingway collected a lot of busts of animals. And I know that you're going to talk about the busts that are all over the house. On page 62 of your book, which is a really nice picture you have here, it says, the English writer Graham Greene once remarked he did not know how anyone could write with so many dead animals staring at them. So I know there's a lot of busts of animals in the house. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, he hunted basically in Africa and throughout the western United States, and as with many hunters in that era, they liked to put up their trophies. There's a lot of gazelle. There's one with a water buffalo that attracts the people that look in. It just dominates the place. The other thing that you do not see on his walls when you see inside is a lot of the art that he collected. He was very a very good collector of, at that time, avant-garde art, and those are missing because Mary Hemingway took them out of the Finca and brought them back to the United States.
Yeah, I've read that they had quite a few pieces of art there, including, was it the Miro, the farm?
Yes, yes. When I was there, they did not even have the print of that up. But I understand from some colleagues that they now have a print of it up there. The original now is in the collection of the National Gallery of Art and worth millions.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you went into the home, a rare treat because most people don't get to go in there. Did you feel his presence?
I'll tell you, I felt his presence more when I came outside the house, because right outside the house they have this magnificent tree out there, and you can sit under there and chairs, and this is, of course, after I've been through the house, and you can sit there and... If you sit there and think long enough, as I think I said in the book, pretty soon you can almost hear the tapping of his typewriter as he tries to write one more true sentence. That's when I really felt his presence when I was outside.
That is fascinating. Yeah, I plan to walk all around the area when I'm there on the tour. Did you see his boat, Pilar?
Yes, Pilar is it sits now in the old tennis court. His former boatman, Hemingway, willed the boat to his former boatman.
Gregorio Fuentes.
Absolutely.
And he lived astonishingly to the age of 104.
Yes, he did.
I believe he passed away in around, was it 2002 or 2004, right around then?
Yes. They began to say that he was a national treasure. One of the things that he did, and I don't blame him a bit for doing this because money is difficult in Cuba, he would grant interviews to people, you know, mm-hmm. people that were interested in Hemingway, mm-hmm. and I think he charged $25 U.S. money, which is not a bad amount for Cuba. Mm-hmm. He was willed the boat by Hemingway. After a while, he could not maintain it, so he got a hold of Fidel Castro and said, can you bring it basically onto the Finca? And he recommended where to put it at. And when I saw it in 2008, it was showing a lot of wear. But when I came back again around 2010 or 2011, it looked like a brand new boat, and it really worked on it.
Yeah, I know. Actually, there was a recent book called Hemingway's Boat. I know that he absolutely loved the boat. It was supposed to be about 38 feet. I think it turned out, you mentioned in your book, to be about 35 and a half feet, but a good fishing cruiser, and he took it all around the Gulf Stream. By the way, people who don't know Hemingway may not know that he was absolutely fascinated with the Gulf Stream and the fish and all the animals around the area. In fact, did some research for the Academy of Natural Sciences in Philadelphia, a couple of representatives of which actually visited him down there and went fishing with him, and he even got a marlin named after him, so which is kind of an interesting story.
Yeah, it wasn't a marlin. It was another type. I don't mean to correct.
Sailfish?
It was just, I can't even describe the species. It was, mm-hmm. it was a species, and the science with them, scientists with them, named it.
Mm-hmm. Named it after, I think, Neo Marenti Hemingway, which is fascinating. But we're going to take a short break for a commercial, but stay with us. We'll be right back with Dennis Noble talking about Hemingway's Cuba.
Do you have a wedding, graduation, baptism, confirmation, milestone, or birthday to plan? You need John Surratt Catering, one of the most highly rated and preferred caterers throughout the Philadelphia area. They will be there to create and cater your event while assisting as much or as little as you desire. Planning a decadent, over-the-top company gala? Need help transforming your backyard into the party of the year? Want to wow your clients with a delicious luncheon? Then you need John Surratt Catering. All you have to do is call, and they'll handle the rest. Located at 835 Lincoln Avenue in Westchester, visit them at SurrockCatering.com or call 610-640-2836. That's 610-640-2836.
If you had to choose a roofer, would you choose one with limited experience and knowledge, or would you choose a roofer certified as a master elite contractor by the largest manufacturer in the nation, GAF, a distinction shared by only 3% of the nation's roofers? I'm talking about GP Martini Roofing, who also does siding, windows, doors, and offers an ironclad guarantee that he'll repair or replace any roof for defects within its normal life. GP Martini Services, Chester, Delaware, Bucks, and Montgomery counties, with free estimates and consultation, and does both commercial and residential. Go to their website at martiniroofing.com for special savings, or call 610-873-1696. And also, financing is available with no payments for a full year. Now, what roofer would you call? GP Martini is the answer, 610-873-1696.
From Longwood Gardens to the Chester County Courthouse, from the Downingtown Loghouse to the Paoli Battlefield, from Lincoln University to Immaculata University, this is WCHE 1520 AM, the talk of Chester County.
I'm I'm Gene Pasale, and this is Living History. Today we're talking with an adventurer, Ernest Hemingway, actually, Dennis Noble, who walked in Hemingway's footsteps in Cuba and just wrote a book called Hemingway's Cuba, Finding the Places and People That Influenced the Writer. Dennis, you did a few trips to Cuba, and you went to the village of Cohimar. Now, many people know Ernest Hemingway because of what came of that event in his life when he visited that village, a novella called The Old Man in the Sea, which won him the Pulitzer Prize. Did this book give you any insights into the man?
The book on the old man in the sea or the village?
I'm assuming you've at least looked at the book, The Old Man in the Sea. Has that given you any insights into how he wrote about the place, Cohimar, the fishing village?
Yes, in fact, I based my trips there. I stopped at La Traza, where he ate, and learned from the fishermen there. I was more interested in the village than basically how it had affected him. Would you like to hear that?
Oh, sure. Yeah, go ahead.
I think one of the great things about Cohimar is that when Hemingway died, the poor fishermen of the village said they wanted to do something to show their respects to Hemingway, who they looked upon as a fellow fisherman, not as a writer, but as a fellow fisherman. So they got a hold of a artist in Havana and wanted him to do a bust on Hemingway, but with just Hemingway. And the artist said he couldn't do it because the embargo stopped the bronze needed for it. So these poor fishermen who have really nothing took some of their bronze fishing gear and melted it down for the bronze, and that was what was used for the bust of Hemingway. And I think that shows more than anything else that I've read or watched or looked at, shows how Cubans felt at that time of Hemingway. And matter of fact, they still sort of flock to the area.
Now, if you've got an entire chapter on Cohimar, you've got a great picture on page 149 of La Terraza, the restaurant where he dined with Gregorio Fuentes, I believe, at least a few times, and you've got just a clear view of the table where Hemingway sat. You can actually see, I think, the ocean in the background. You've also got another couple of shots of the little fort, several hundred-year-old fort back into the 1600s called the Castillo there in Cohimar, and a wonderful, wonderful close-up of the bust of Hemingway just across the little patio there in Cohimar. Clearly, the fishermen of Cohimar and the whole village was very important to him. One thing that struck me is that I think you mentioned that a lot of these fishermen, at least at that time, literally fished with their hands. They would go out with ropes and nets, and that's how they would catch their fish. They didn't have fancy fishing trawlers or anything like that.
You're absolutely right. In fact, my photographs didn't come out very well on that. I still saw fishermen out near La Terraza throwing nets, catching fish.
Now, when you went to Terraza, were you able to have lunch there?
Yes, and if you want travel there, it is a very good place to have. There's a little story on that, too. In the 1970s, that's the last date I saw, Fidel Castro was touring in the area, and he was a very big fan of Hemingway, and he said, "How is La Traza?" And his staff said, "It is become just a roadhouse, a cheap roadhouse." He ordered La Traza to be refurbished and fixed so that it was as it was when Hemingway was there, and the menu to reflect the menu that when Hemingway was there. I think that says right there just how important Colimar is to the story of Hemingway in Cuba.
Yes, clearly the people there really loved him, and I plan to stop at La Terraza, hopefully maybe have lunch. I think you mentioned there's a small bar there as well.
Yes, absolutely. It's when you come in off the main street, that's the first thing you see is a small bar there, and that's where the fisherman, of course, would be, and he would talk there. There used to also be a tree in the back of La Terraza, and the fishermen would meet there and discuss their days, and Hemingway was... when he was in Cuba, he would always go down to the lowest level to talk to people. In other words, he would talk to the people that did the fishing. He'd rather do that than with a sport fisherman.
Yeah.
And he would listen to their talk and gain knowledge of the fishing area.
You mentioned to me off the radio interview that you actually enjoy just walking around the village and kind of getting the feel for Hemingway's Cuba right there in Cohamar.
Yes, we drove all over the village. That was, you know, to give the feel of it, and then I got out and just picked a street. I couldn't even tell you what street it was. One of the things that I did do is find another street that led down to the water, and if you find a street like that, walk towards the water, and if you've known anything about the old man of the sea, you can almost see those old fishermen that Hemingway wrote about lugging their catch of sailfish up to the market.
That is fascinating. You know, when I get there to La Terraza, I'm going to have to raise a toast to my good friend Stu Foster, who I know wants to visit there at some point. And Stu, if you're listening in, I know that you're probably planning a trip to Cuba at some point in the future, and I'm sure it will be wonderful. And by the way, the tours there, I think you mentioned to me, Dennis, that sometimes the tour buses are so crowded that the bars and the restaurants just get overflowing with people.
Yes, there are a lot of tourists in there. When I was in there, it was people from Europe, Asia, just about any place. A few Americans slipping under the radar were there, but it was usually Europeans and Asians.
Mm-hmm.
But it can get very crowded, and if Stu wants to go there to eat or you want to go there to eat, I would try to get there around 11:30 in the afternoon or the morning.
Yeah.
Get there early, yes.
Yeah.
You can no longer sit at the table location where Hemingway sat. They've now got it roped off. When I was there, you could sit there and...
Did you actually sit in his chair?
No. The chairs would be long gone.
Okay.
But you could sit at the table area.
Oh, that is fascinating. You know, one book that I absolutely love is Islands in the Stream, which is published in 1970 after he passed away. And I feel it's one of his best. And there is a whole section on Cuba, a whole section on Bimini, and then At Sea. What are your thoughts on that book? Obviously, it was a big influence on Hemingway because it was one of the last things he wrote about that was affected by Cuba.
I liked... In that book, I liked the description of Cuba, especially he has the protagonist go from his finca down into downtown Old Havana. In fact, we tried to follow that, my guide Victor and I, we followed that route. And if you read the book, you get a good feel for how it was in that time.
Absolutely. In fact, I love the book. Just finished it a couple of days ago. I highly recommend it. You mentioned walking the streets of Havana, and it's interesting to me that you literally were walking in the footsteps of Hemingway. You walked the streets, the same places he went to. You went to La Floridita, which was, I think, his favorite bar.
Yes.
What did you? I think you mentioned Floridita can get pretty crowded as well.
Yes, it can. when I went in there, all the times I went in there, they must have been three or four deep at the bar there. They're all tourists.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, yeah, there's also, there was a bust of Hemingway on the wall there. Then, I guess at a later time, they actually added a full-size sculpture of him standing at the bar.
Absolutely, you got it right there. In fact, the bust on the wall there, the artist that did that one did the bust for Koimar.
Oh, that's fascinating. Now, what is just curious? What is your favorite Hemingway book?
My favorite Hemingway book is The Old Man and the Sea, strangely enough.
Mm-hmm.
But I also like his short stories, especially those that take place in Upper Michigan, rural Upper Michigan, because that's where I was born.
Oh, yeah. Well, Big Two-Hearted River is a classic.
Yes.
Just a great, great short story. A lot of people say that's where his talent really started to shine in that format, the short story format. You know, when you wrote the book, did you have any kind of afterthoughts about, okay, how can I portray the people, places, the sights, sounds that Hemingway experienced? Did you have any thoughts about, you know, how to portray that in the book?
Yes, my normal writing is maritime history, and this is a big switch for me. Mm-hmm. However, there are some of the things that it just came naturally. If you want to portray Cubans, the easiest way to say it, they are the most friendly, outgoing, and helpful people you'll ever run into.
I've heard that, and by the way, for anybody who's a little bit worried about eating the food there, you said the food was excellent.
Yes, I had no problem, and I've got a very bad stomach and getting too old for too much things. but I had no problem. I recommend you try to eat at the places that is not run by the state. Everything's run by the state, you understand.
Yes. Well, you mentioned the Mercurio Cafe was superb.
Yes, it is. It's very good. And when I was there, I noticed when couples came in, the management always gave the woman flowers.
Oh, my gosh. That sounds special.
Now, I don't know whether they were going to just give them to Cubans or because you can spot the North Americanos and the other people real easy. But I asked the management about that, and he says, no, it's our policy to give women the flowers.
Very friendly and very cordial. Dennis, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a wonderful walking tour of Old Town Havana. Be sure to tune in next Wednesday, February 15th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, when we'll be speaking with Marissa Blum of the National Constitution Center in downtown Philadelphia and their new exhibit on Prohibition. Thank you all for tuning in today to Living History.